Oh, man, I'm here. I'm here. Don't you go away. May I please, as part of our vast public service programming here, may I make a salute here? Please, I want you to sit up straight out there. Come on, straighten up. Come on. All right. I would like to make a salute here, would you please? Tonight, we would like to salute Shorty Wagner. Any of you ever hear of Shorty Wagner? Well, Shorty Wagner's life will become, very shortly, as powerful, as all-seeing, as all-encompassing as Gloria Steinem. And for many of the same reasons. He will become the Betty Friedan of another besieged minority group. We would like to salute tonight Shorty Wagner, please. Hold it there. Now, you want to know who Shorty Wagner is? All right, you're going to hear it for the first time on this show. Right here. Sarasota, Florida. Noting the success of women's lib groups and getting attention to the demands at New College, which is in Sarasota, Florida, 4 feet, 10 inch, and 1/2 student Wendell Shorty Wagner posted his own demands on behalf of short people. And we quote, yes, sir, he says, we, the short people of New College, hereby make the following unconditional demands on the New College community in order to restore our dignity and stature in other people's eyes. We are tired of being ignored and discriminated against because people look right over us. Wagner's demands began. Posting his proclamation at eye level, about 4 feet 8 inches, Shorty Wagner asked for special courses. Now he wants short people history, for example. Hey, we're getting some applause from the control room there from a couple of shorties. Wagner asked for short people history. He wants shorter library stacks. He says, I can't even reach the books. He wants shorter library stacks, admissions preference to short people. He says, you know, a lot of short people just don't get admitted anymore. He said, they're looking for basketball players down here. And he's a little 4'5" short. He shows up, forget it, man. We'll take 3 of you for one of them, you know. And he said, I want special open admission for short people. Incidentally, George, you may be pleased to hear that he wants short people history courses taught. I mean, you know. And he also wants a lot of other things. He even wants protection from assault by tall students. Shorty Wagner's demands appeared in the student center of New College in the midst of a president's office sit-in. They had a big sit-in going on down there by a group of radical feminists that spanned a set of liberations from the gay liberation group. They wanted to hear that, too. See, everybody's protesting. So Shorty says, wait a minute, you guys. Shorty Wagner, 19, of Mount Corey, Ohio, a transfer from Bowling Green State University, said he wanted to point up the total absurdity and the impossibility of recent demands, although he said he was not without sympathy with the oppressed groups. And we quote, there's a whole spectrum of irrelevant things people judge each other on, like size, color, sex, religion, and looks. And this hurts not only to people being misjudged, but society itself, since we need the very best people we can get. Wagner's full set of demands include, and here are his demands. If you're a shorty, you'll appreciate this. Of course, and by the way, a person is officially called short by Shorty Wagner if he's 5'7" or smaller and male. Now, if it is a woman type, if she is 4'11" or shorter, she's officially short. Okay? That sounds reasonable, doesn't it? Here are his demands. That a course be started immediately on the history of short people and a history of tall oppression. Yeah, oh, well, listen, he's got a point here. Suggested course titles are, 1, The Life of Napoleon, and the films, in retrospect and appreciation, the films of Mickey Rooney. He says, library bookshelves be redesigned to suit short people. 2, that preference and admission be given to the short students, especially the female short students, and that they be protected by personal bodyguards from assault from tall students, quote, since I like to start fights with tall students. That he does. That birth control be made mandatory among tall students, but that procreation be encouraged for short ones. And, Stu, and by the way, you know, he's got a point. Let me tell you a very, very funny thing about that short thing. That the college established a short community center, so, quote, that the short people of New College and Sarasota not be cut off from each other. He says, maybe there are a few retired circus midgets in the area. We'd like to meet them. And here's another one. That there be an end to other attempts to ridicule us, such as giving us mailboxes too high to reach. He says, I went through two semesters now not able to reach my mailbox. Remember how tall he is. did you know he's 4'8", you know. That's a shorty. And his last one says, we must have a short counselor be hired for the school to counteract the effect of those now employed. He says that not one counselor on our campus is under 6 feet tall. And they all look down at me and say loudly, you don't have to have an inferiority complex being short. He says, that's easy enough for you to say. He says, as I look up there where the snow is still falling on the top of his head because he's so tall. Well, you know, this is a... Did I ever tell you about this friend of mine? I'll tell you a funny story about a buddy of mine. Now, this guy, he carries it with him. He carries it with him like a guy. And he's a well-known editor here in town. And I might say he's redirected the work of a lot of tall authors once he's met him. After he's, you know, it's because of what happened to him. Now, maybe you don't realize that there are a lot of rules that preclude guys from jobs just because they're too short. Now, they can be, you know, they can be mean. They can be tough. Yeah. Oh, the armed forces is right, you know. Now, and this is what I'm getting into. This guy had this fantastic desire from the time he was a little kid. Now, get what he wanted to be, see? From the time he was a little kid, he wanted to be an airplane pilot. And this was everything. You know, he drew pictures of airplanes when he was a kid. Every time he'd turn around, he's drawing pictures on the wall. He built model airplanes. He would go to the airport and he watched the planes fly over and all that stuff. See, so one day, he's sitting there. You know, he's in high school. And he's dreaming. Oh, he's going to be an airplane. Every time when anybody asks him what he's going to be, he's going to be an airplane pilot. I mean, you know, like some people say, I'm going to be an actor. I'm going to be a lawyer. Some guys say, well, I'm going to be a baker. Although I've never heard anybody say, you know, anything like that. But anyway, he really wanted to be an airplane pilot, right? That's all he wanted to be. Well, and he planned. See, what he had planned to do was he was going to become an air cadet. Now, perhaps you don't know that to learn to fly, if you're going to be a pilot, you're really going to be a pilot. I mean, a real pilot. I'm talking about a guy that flies in airlines. Almost all airline pilots, with not too many exceptions, have been trained by the military. Now, there's a reason for this, because it costs like $30,000 right from the start to get the kind of hours, the kind of training and everything else to wind up so that you can fly big multi-engine jet transport airplane. This is something you don't go down to the local airport to take. And so it's even more expensive to learn to be an airplane pilot. This may surprise you, that the airplane pilot that's piloting that aircraft in the front when you get into that 747, that there's more money involved in this guy's training than is involved in the most complex medical specialty now extant in the United States. Did you know that? Not many people knew that. You could much easier, as far as finances and all that are concerned, become a leading brain surgeon than to become a just run-of-the-mill 747 captain pilot. So, what is the answer? Well, almost all of the pilots, see, they get into the Air Force, or they get into the Naval Air Force or something. That's where they can get their training, you see. And they wind up, and after the years are over in their training, it's fantastic education. Unparalleled by any other organization. So, this was his dream, right? Well, he all the way through high school, he'd hear these announcements on, you know, be an air cadet, yes, be an air cadet, and all that, you know, fly, yes. And so he didn't have it. Never occurred to him, see. Only one thing. He would have been one of Shorty's group. So, but he didn't think of it as that bad. See, he was innocent. And so the day came, and he goes down to the recruiting station where they were looking for air cadets. See, and he had nothing but straight A's, because that's what he knew. He had to have straight A's to get there. And he took all the math courses he could take, which is, you know, hell itself. He took every math course. He took every physics course. He took chemistry, all the science courses. He just loaded himself up and had nothing but math credits. Straight A. He had a 4.0 average, man. So he goes trotting down there with his diploma hot in his hand. It says, we are looking for... He's got every possible thing fixed. You know, he's utilized it. He kept himself in great physical condition. And he used to exercise his eyes. He was one of these guys, you know, he heard that, you know, you have great eyes to be a pilot. So he would sit there and wiggle his eye and look, and he would concentrate. He would put an orange or something, you know, 50 feet away, and he'd concentrate on the orange. And then he would go out, and he'd look out at the horizon. He'd do these eye exercises. You ever seen a guy do eye exercises? Yeah, and his eyeballs are bugging, you know, he's crossing his eyes and all that. But so he was really hard as a rock. So he goes trapping down there, and the recruiting lieutenant there, they had a lieutenant with big silver wings, and you could see this guy. He had the look of an eagle about him, 6 feet two. And he took one look at this guy, say, Harold, he says, well, he said, you say you'd like to be a pilot? Is that what you want to be? Let me see your, may I see your high school credit sheet, your diploma and all that stuff? He says, here's the form you can fill out. And so he's frantically filling out. This is a great, exciting moment. He's filling out all this stuff, and he's got all his credentials and his high school transcript, the credits and everything. And he's the only guy I ever knew that when he was going to high school, he was going at night, get this, he was going at night to university extension. Now, that sounds, this is dedication, man. By the time he got out of high school, he had almost 2 years of college credit that he had stacked in. This guy worked night and day, see? So here he is. He's sitting at the desk with all his credentials, and boy, I mean, desire burning in his eyes. He was a famous model airplane, but he wrote articles on model airplanes and stuff. So the lieutenant says, very good. Fills out the application. Very good. You have, I see, three letters of recommendation, endorsement from your school principal. He says, well, that's very good. One from the minister. That's very nice. You say that your brother was he's a major, eh? B-29 pilot. 17 years Air Force. You say he's still in. You mean you never talked to him about it? The kid says, well, yeah, I did. He says, well, excuse me 1 minute, please. So would you step over this way? And so he walks over, and they had a scale. You know what, these scales with the thing that goes up, and they put the little sheet on the top of your head? And he just stands him on his case. He just says, gee, wait, just right. He says, just a minute. He raises that little thing up, and he lays it on the top of his head. A long, pregnant pause. And he says, you know, have you ever considered being a mechanic? You know, there's a great future. And he says, what do you mean? He says, you are 5 feet, 5 inches, and a quarter. He says, we do not take applications for pilots for anybody under 5 feet, 6 inches. Bum, ba-dum, bum. Just like that. The world dropped right out of him. I mean, somebody pulled the big plug and it was going down the drain. Man, speaking of drains, this is WOR, New York. Hey, I have a special note here about the Mandarin House. They've had such a fantastic turnout for the tremendous New Year's dinner that they've been putting on down there, which includes Peking duck, which is a spectacular dish. The Mandarin House wants you to make reservations before you come down. Just don't show up. You'll probably be disappointed. The number is 929-0551. You give them a call before you get down there. And if you don't know about it, this is now the Chinese New Year. And between now and the 27th of February, the Mandarin House, which is on 13th Street, 133 West, between 6th and 7th Avenues, is having a fantastic Chinese New Year's feast. It's really great for just $95, and that includes even Peking duck, which is a very rare and expensive dish, and such great chicken dishes as well, sweet and sour, Sichuan fish-flavored pork, and one of the great things I've had down there is the velvet chicken water winter melon soup. It's really great. So if you want to take in this thing, it's only between now and the 27th, and then it's all over. $5.95 for a big New Year's dinner, and you can call them at 929-0551. That's Mandarin House in the Village, 133 West 13th Street between 6th and 7th. It's an old, great restaurant. You should know about it anyway. You
you might expect our higher-priced cars to come loaded. But what about our lowest-priced cars? Well, take the Toyota Corolla 1200 sedan. The manufacturer's suggested retail price for this Toyota is just $1,956, plus freight, local taxes, dealer prep, and options. On it, you'll find at no extra cost front disc brakes, white walls, wheel covers, and tinted glass. The interior decor group is already built in, and the exterior chrome trim is already trimming the exterior. The fresh air heater is standard, the reclining bucket seats are standard, the carpeting, armrests, and four-speed transmission are standard. And that's not the high-priced Toyota. That's the low-priced Toyota.
Yeah, see your nearby Toyota dealer and see the full line of Toyota sedans, hardtops, and station wagons. Good car, Toyota. Okay, we have a note here for the Book Find Club, and these are not my comments. This is the copy comment. It says, did you ever eat in bed and laugh so hard the peanuts rolled off your belly? Or, oh man, or get so absorbed in a book you forgot to set your alarm clock? Well, there's a lot of books that the Book Find Club has that I think you'll enjoy very much. The first one is Our Gang by Philip Roth, and the next one is The Defense Never Rests by F. Lee Bailey. And there's all kinds of great stuff in this book. And if you are interested in some good reading and continued good reading, you should know about the Book Find Club. They'll send you both of these books for $1. That's Our Gang and The Defense Never Rests, plus postage and handling if you call MU72552. As a Book Find member, all you need to buy are two more books in a year, and they're all quality books. So it's a good club to know about. The number again is MU72552, or send your name and address to Book Find, WOR, New York. I have here a letter that says, I can no longer resist Shepherd's incredible salesmanship. I've got to have a bird. It's terrible to fall into the bird syndrome. But if you don't know anything about these birds, Shepherd's incredible salesmanship ain't going to sell you one. But they're beautiful. They're 16 inches across. They were a sensation in Europe, you know, last year. It's the first time they've really been in this country. And they are an ornithopter. They actually fly like a real bird. You just wind up the thing, got a little crank in the back, and she takes off. Comes with special rubber bands in case you break one, and they're just great. They have two colors, yellow and red, and they're only $3.98, and I think for that money, they're probably one of the greatest toys around. Certainly the greatest flying bird around. So if you'd like to order one, just send $3.98, and that'll be postage paid, and New York State residents add the tax to Flying Birds. Make your check or money order to Flying Birds, Department S, Post Office Box 1909, Grand Central Station, New York, New York. And he stood there. He says, he'll never forget that. He says, it was funny. It was like all of a sudden his head, he was stunned. It was like a shock. It's terrible. He says, everything since, he said, it was like a big, enormous electric shock. He tingled all over, you know. He just, all of his life, this was a big moment. He aimed at this instant. He dreamed of the day when he would go down there and he'd recruit him, you know, and the next minute, you know, he saw himself on the train. He was going down to, you know, places like Mitchell Air Force Base or Randolph Air, one of these great places here, and he saw himself doing these wingovers. He saw himself glinting in the sun, high, you know, those wings, you know, with the big stars and all. He said, you are 5 feet, 5 inches, and 1/4. You mean? I'm sorry, son. And so they went back and he sat down at the desk and he says, isn't there any way? He says, no, that's the rule. 5 feet, 5 1/4. He's, but how come? You mean I couldn't put a pillow under me when I fly to plane? What do you mean? You mean just because I'm 5 feet, 5 1/4 inches, I can't fly the airplane? Is it because you got to be strong to work on it? He says, no. Since modern aircraft is all operated with electrical, it's all electronic, but that's the rule. That's the rule. He says, you mean they don't have a thing on a seat you can crank it up so you can sit up higher and you can look out of the window? He says, yes, they do. But that's the rule. He says, isn't there anything I can do about it? He says, well, you figure you can grow a couple of feet. Maybe that'll help, but sorry. Well, the sad thing about Hal is that he was now 18, see? And he had been exactly the same height since he was in the eighth grade. Ain't gonna be no more. just ain't going to be no more. So he goes dragging home. I mean, he was dragging then. He's dragging home. And he gets back to the house there. Mother says, what's the matter? Nothing. By the way, his mother was 5'9" and his old man was 6'12". You know, that's what makes guys really bug. I mean, if you actually earn being a shorty, you know, if you're surrounded by, you know, if your kid brother's 3'2", but he says his kid brother, you know, his brother, his older brother, was about 6'2", you know, flew the B-29s and all that stuff. Here he is. Why me? His grandfather, by the way, was over 9 feet tall, you know, and it went all the way back. I mean, here he was. He was suddenly a throwback to the Neanderthal age, you know, him of all people. He sat there. He said, I'll never forget. He says, I sat. He says, I couldn't eat for 3 days. He said, which didn't do anything for my height either. He says, I didn't eat. He says, I just sat there. He said, I just kind of looked out the window. And he said, once in a while, I'd plop or try to figure I'd go in with a pair of Adler shoes on or something. He says, I knew it was no good because, you know, they strip you down to, you know, just like an onion. You got nothing there. There ain't no way to fake it, see. So I'm just sitting there thinking about this, you know, and he said, I'm sad about it, and I'm worried about it. I said, no, what? He said, I couldn't think of myself doing anything else. In no way. He said, I couldn't see myself there, you know, being fixing the airplanes. I said, no, that's not what I wanted. He said, I couldn't see myself selling advertising time on a radio station, none of that stuff. I could only see myself doing one thing, that's flying. So I sat there. I just sat there and kind of moped around. A couple of days go by, and finally my old man says, what's the matter with you, Harold? I says, well, what do you mean, what's the matter with me? It's your fault. He says, what do you mean it's your fault? He says, well, I read when I was taking biology that how tall a kid is transmitted through his old man. I'm 5'5" tall, that's what I am, and look at, you done it. Well, you know, this made the old man feel pretty bad because he didn't think of it that way, you know, and he hadn't planned it that way. He didn't know what he was doing, you know. You know how you get in the heat of passion like that, and the next thing you know, and here it is. So the kid moped around for about 2 weeks. You want to hear the rest of the story, do you? You do? You want to hear what happened? All right, there's an end to this story. It isn't as simple as it sounds, see? So he's moping around, and he's hanging around now, and he's starting to, he says, it's funny. He says, I begin to really go to hell. He said, you know, I started to hang around the pool room. You know, there was nothing in forward anymore. He says, he'd been keeping himself, you know, very straight and clean, you know, and he'd been doing these push-ups. He said, I let all that stuff go. He said, you know, the hell with the push-ups. And he said, I started eating Baby Ruth candy bars. The next thing you know, I'm drinking Yoo-Hoo. And he said, I'll never forget one night I started to drink that Thunderbird. And he said, you know, it started to go like that, and everybody's worrying about me. He said, one day I'm sitting in the pool room. He said, they had one of these pulp magazines, you know, like a detective, true detective type magazine. He says, I've fallen that low, you know. I'm sitting there reading about an axe murder or something, you know, thinking maybe I ought to try it, you know. He said, I'm reading away there. He said, I get in the back of the magazine. They got all these ads in the back. I've seen those ads, you know. It says, if you've been kicked around by bullies, get yourself on these springs and all that, you know, and you develop the muscles, you know, muscles in the biceps and all that stuff. See, and he says, way down in the bottom there was this ad, you know. He says, right down there, buried among all the ads for 50 glamorous poses and stuff like that. He says, down there in the ad, it says, are you short? Would you like to grow a minimum of 2 or 3 inches? Are you short? Have you been discriminated against? He says, by God, there's an ad. Did you ever see one of those? There you have them. You can check. Thank you. Thank you, George. I'm glad. Yes, that's right. And he says, that's right. And he wrote in, see? He said, oh, my God. He said, got so excited. He said, run home. He says, he got that letter out, and he wrote it down. He says, send me quick. Get in touch with me. He said, sure enough, a couple of days later, he says, they're starting to lay these courses on him. And he says he takes out all his savings, you know, the money he got for birthdays all the way back to the time he was 5, and he pays for this correspondence course on how to become tall. Well, now, you know, he says, it's funny. He says, they had all these exercises where you stand up against the wall, you know, and you stand up on your toes. He said, and you put your shoulder blades up against, and he said, and I had to buy a thing that you screwed into the, there was a thing you screwed right into the beams in the ceiling. So he said, my old man helped me put it up, and I had a couple of rings on it. And you'd hold on to this thing, see, and he says, and he tightened it, you'd stand for hours standing there stretching. Well, you stretch your feet to reach down to the ground, you stretch, and he says, after 1 week, it said, and you must measure yourself only after you've been doing this
conscientiously, religiously for 1 week. He said, I've been doing it religiously. I did three. He said, they say do it for 2 hours standing. He said, I stood for 5-6 days straight, you know, holding on there and he's stretching. He said, and he says, sure enough, he said, I measured myself. He said, by God, I actually gained 1/4 inch. I am 1/4 inch taller. And he says, it's fantastic how you suddenly start feeling real tall. He said, I walk around, I'm looking down, you know. Well, that made him, you realize, 5 feet 5 inches and 1/2 now, you know, and he's feeling real big, see. So he says, another week go by, and I'm straining and sweating and puffing away there. And he said, sure enough, he said, after 4 weeks, he says, I am just under 5'6". He says, and I'll never forget that morning. He said, I stretched and strained. It was Saturday morning, and I rush over to the thing where they put the little thing on my head. He said, I had one set up in the corner of the room. I am now 5'6" right on the button. Well, he said, I just want to tell you, he said, it was, what a day. Fantastic day. He says, I was 5'6". He says, so I figured what I'm going to do is continue it over the weekend. This was on a Saturday. And he says, I'm going to make sure. He says, all that Saturday, he says, I'm stretching, I'm standing on my toes. And he says, and they had these exercises where you would lay down on the ground, and they had two things you clamp around your ankles. You ever seen those? And you'd lay flat on the ground, see? And these things would hook to the baseboard of the wall, and you try to crawl away from it. See, it's like you're trapped on it, see? And you raise your feet up. He says, oh, it's all supposed to stretch the cartilage and all that stuff and stretch your backbone, see? So sure enough, he worked all weekend. He said, and by God, Monday morning came up, and he says, I was 5'6" tall. He said, I stood there tall. He says, I wish I'd discovered this years ago. I could have easily made the basketball team, you know? And he said, I was a full 5'6". He said, you know, it's the tallest I've ever been in my life. And he said, so I run down to the recruiting station, bright 8 a.m. He says, you know, he's waiting there, man. He says, and sure enough, he's out there by the door there. When they open up the place, he pops in. They're waiting, see? And there's the lieutenant. The lieutenant says, look, you know, he said, you were here a few weeks ago, you know. He said, I'd like to help you. He said, measure me. Measure me. The guy says, well, all right. We walk across that floor. He says, and I'm feeling great. He says, I took off my shoes and all that. He says, I stood there, and he says, and he laid that thing on top of my head. And he says, how tall do you think I measured? 5'6" and 1/8". And the lieutenant says, now, wait a minute. There must be a mistake. He says, you were 5'5". I said, I got it written right down here in your form, 5'5" and 1/4". He says, let me see you standing. He says, now, he says, you standing with your feet down on the ground there? He says, yeah, you are. He says, let me measure this again. He says, by God, I was 5'6" and 1/8". He says, well, the lieutenant turns around. He says, wait a minute. He says, I want to check with somebody. He says, Sergeant, would you come in here, please? And he says, and this big master sergeant come in there. He says, he's got stripes hanging up and down his sleeve there. You know, he's got these bars and ribbons all over the place. And he says, I want you, Sergeant, he said, would you talk to this man here? Would you please measure this man? Have you ever seen this guy before? And the sergeant says, no, I haven't, sir. He says, would you please measure him? He says, the sergeant takes me over to this thing again. He measures me. He says, yeah, yes, sir, Lieutenant. He's 5'6" and 1/8". The lieutenant says, well, he said, I, how'd you do it? He says, well, I'm a growing boy. I haven't finished going. No telling how tall I might get the next couple of months. Lieutenant says, well, he says, here, as far as I can see here, so you fill all the bill. He said, all you can do now, he says, we'll call you for your physical. He said, you'll be called for physical in a couple of weeks. And he said, we'll be in touch. He said, we've got your application now. We'll process it. He said, now, you know, there's a quota here. So maybe you may not make it. He said, but boy, it looks pretty good. You got a straight A. He says, you got everything. He said, your eyes, how are your eyes? He says, well, pretty good. You don't wear glasses? No, fine. He said, we'll be calling you. Well, my friend goes home, he's walking on air. He is walking 30 feet off the ground. He said, I was looking down at the houses. He said, it was amazing. He said, see all them little people walking right on. He said, you know, I'm just walking on top of the air. So I get home. He said, boy, he said, I'm walking a house. I'm singing, you know, and I say to Ma, I said, I'm in Ma. I said, my God, I've grown. She says, gee, you know, I'm so glad. Harold, I'm so glad. My old man comes home. He said, you know, we sat down there. He said, we had a beer. It's the first time I ever had a beer with my old man. He had a beer, and we talked about it. We went out. We celebrated that night. He says, and you know what I did? He says, I knew I was going to have this physical. He said, so every day, he says, from that day on, he said, I did nothing but stand there and stretch them. He says, I've had those things stretched out. He says,
He said, every day, he said, I'd get up at 7 o'clock in the morning. I wouldn't stop till 10 o'clock that night. And he said, you know what happened? At the end of 2 weeks, I am six. He said, I'm 5 feet, 6 inches and 1/2 inches tall. Would you believe it? I said, I will. You say it. He said, it's absolutely true. It's on my record. He said, 2 or 3 weeks go by, and suddenly one day in comes this notice in the mail. It says, you will report to the such and such a hospital, VA hospital. You will go down there, and you will be there at 8 a.m. You will be there the following Thursday after this date, and you will be there to receive your Air Force flying physical. He says, my God, I was so excited. He said, I went down. He said, I even went to my own doctor, have him check everything, make sure I was, you know, cool. See, he said, I had an eye check and everything cool, absolutely. He said, I had 20/10 vision. He said, you know, I could. He said, I'm one of the few guys you ever met that could see through walls, that kind of vision. He said, I could see everything, see. He says, and the day comes when I'm down, he said, I've been exercising all morning. He said, I go into that doctor. He said, I'm standing tall. He said, I go breezing through that eye exam. The first thing he gives you is eye examination. He said, breeze right through that eye examination. He said, I was reading stuff on the back of the chart. He said, I'm reading stuff that they got on charts that are 3 floors away. He said, they let me right on through. He says, and they take my heart. He says, my God, I never heard a heart as good as this. He said, that heart, you know, they ought to have the recording of that heartbeat to show to medical students what a perfect heart is sounding like. He says, and then they measure my biceps, and they measure everything. They measure my head, and he said, they look into my ears. You know, I was a perfect specimen. Well, they finally come to that last thing. They weigh me. He said, you know, this is just sort of a detail at the end. They weigh me, and they lay that little piece of metal on top. He said, I'm standing up straight, 5 feet, 6 inches, and 1/2. He says, that man just takes that great big stamper and goes. He says, yes, sir, son, you are in. He says, you are a perfect specimen. I said, well, of course, then I could relax. He said, it was just great. He said, I was in. They gave me a bunch of forms to fill out, and I sat down, and I filled out those forms. And he said, God, it was just great. He says, sure enough, 2 weeks later, I am now in the primary training school. They gave me a suit. He said, I'm starting up my career. And he said, and you could hear the planes going over. You know, he said, those training planes. He said, we'd see them out the window. And there I am with all the rest of my fellow cadets. And we are getting ground school. He says, they're giving us ground school. He says, I'm just breezing. He says, you know, when you've had straight A in math, he said, this stuff is greasy kid stuff. He said, I am 4.0. So the first month, 4.0 in ground school, he said, I am known as the mathematical navigational shark of flight 19B, series D. He says, now I'm just going on, just right on down the line. He said, I'll never forget that day when they took us all out and they gave us our flight suit and they're taking us up for our first indoctrination flight in the training plane. And he said, I got my suit on. He said, I got my helmet. I said, Jesus. He said, I just can't tell you how excited I was. And he said, the instructor come down the line. He's picking out everybody. And he said, and finally, they picked me out. And he said, we get in this plane. We go up. And he said, I knew it. I knew that minute that I had met my destiny. Kismet. He said, it was not only everything that I figured it would be. He said, it was 10 times more. He says, it's like arriving in heaven and discovering it really is. You know, it's all there and it's ready. And they're laying it on you. It's just fantastic. You can see the sky and the birds. He said, we're up there flying, and the lieutenant is on the phone there in the intercom. And he said, now I want you to follow me through this takeoff. He said, just put your feet down there on the rudder pedals. You feel them down there? He said, now here, you feel me moving them rudder pedals? He said, now here. He said, I want you to grab that yoke. He said, you feel that movement of the yoke? He said, now see how it's very sensitive and gentle. He said, just follow me through. He said, and we go down that runway. And he said, I could see that horizon coming up, and I could feel this movement on the pedals. He said, the yoke and the rudder moving. I see the altimeter going up and up, 900. We're up 1,200 feet. We're going up in the air. We make a big left turn in the pattern, you know, and we're up to 1,200, 1,400 feet. Now we peel out of the pattern. He said, I can just see that thing going. The airspeed is picking up. I can see the RPMs are laying down there, 2,400. Everything is great. He said, I just tell you. He said, I was sitting in the back seat there just in ecstasy. Well, he said, we had that flight lesson. He said, we had another one the next day. And he said, after a while, I had about 8-9 hours of dual instruction. One day, that lieutenant says to me, he says, well, Harold, he said, you're ready. She's your bird. Take it up. He said, I went out, I patted that big bird on the tail there. We walked around, did a walk around. He said, and I get in the cockpit, and he said, and I switch around. I get the things moving. I read the meters. He said, see the air there. Everything's working fine. The pressure magneto is up there. And he said, and the oil pressure's groovy. He said, I wheeled down to the end of the runway. And he said, I check with the tower. And he said, 79 George cleared for takeoff. And he said, Roger, 7-9, George, taking off. Click. And he said, I rolled down that runway, and 30 seconds later, I am airborne on my first solo flight. So we kept climbing. He said, you know, and he'd always heard about how guys would get scared and chicken out. And he said, my God, they all do all that. He said, it was nothing like that with me. He said, I was in my natural habitat. He said, I went into that pattern. He said, I went downwind. He said, I went on that base leg. He said, I laid it down. He said, I had a beautiful wheel landing. He said, I want to tell you, you could have busted. He said, you could have had an egg there, and it would never even creaked the shell. He said, so I taxied down to the end there, and he said, and I did another takeoff and landing. He said, I went around the pattern 3 or 4 times, and finally, he said, I see the lieutenant down there, standing way down near the taxiway, and he just waved. See, he says, I come in, he waves me in. He says, I taxied off, and he said, when I got out of the plane, he says, well, Harrod, you's a flyer now. You is a flyer. He said, I hopped down off that airplane. He said, we walked in. He said, you know, they've got this old tradition of clipping your shirt tail off, you know, when you first solo. He says, well, they clipped off my shirt tail. Everybody's cheering and yelling. We go down. We have a drink down at the officers' club and the whole thing. He said, I'll tell you, I was in seventh heaven. He says, well, another month goes by, and I'm out there getting my solo time in. He says, and then I move out of that flight. He says, and now I'm in. He says, I moved out of basic. He said, now I'm in primary. He said, I'm in a bigger machine. He said, I'm in that big one. He says, now, he said, I get a couple of hours of indoctrination. Now I'm flying a real airplane. He says, we're up. He said, we're beginning to take aerobatics. He says, God, he says, you have no feeling. He says, you don't know how it feels. He said, to be in that big bird with 600 horses ahead of you there, you know, and you're flipping her into a wing over there. He says, you know, and just, he said, it no longer was the airplane flying me. I was flying the airplane. I just knew. It comes, you see. And he says, one day, he said, I'm flying along there. Everything's cool. He said, we're working on formation flying. He said, and there's this guy named Leroy off to my right. He says, Leroy's hanging there on my right wing. And he said, and Clifford's off on my left wing. And he says, and I see that echelon formation down below me. We're flying at 13,000 feet. And we got the oxygen going, you know. And he says, and the intercoms are clicking back and forth. And he said, my airspeed indicator is groovy. Everything's fine. He said, and we're executing the maneuver, lateral step, echelon formation in training. He said, we're doing all this stuff. And he said, and we come back down. So I've called in. The captain says, you know, he says, Harold, so you ever thought of being an instructor? You know, you're one of the best pilots we've had come through in years. He said, my God, he said, that to asking me to teach other guys to fly. And that's, well, I really didn't want to do that. But if you insist, you know, he said, I'll do it for a while, but I want to join a tactical squadron. I want to be one of the boys. I want to fly a big one. And so he said, everything was great. He said, I now move up into the next highest. I'm in now advanced fighter school. Now, maybe you don't know what that means, but advanced fighter school is like, well, let's say this, you're on your last step to becoming a brain surgeon. In fact, you're doing a few operations. And so he says, I'm out there in that big fighter plane. He said, I've dreamed all my life. He said, and after the second day in that fighter plane, he said, I knew that my destiny had arrived. He said, I kept feeding it. He said, and every time it would turn around, he said, another one would come. And he said, I'm really growing. And he said, I come down after the second day. And he said, we come tooling into the airport. He says, I just laid it down. He says, I'm taxiing out in that big fighter plane. He said, and I stepped down off the wing. You know where it says no step? He says, I stepped down, I swing down, I'm walking. He says, I'm wearing my G suit, you know, and he says, I got my helmet in one hand, I'm walking along there. You know that cool, you've seen him, George, he's that cool feeling. He says, and I could see a few guys, a few enlisted men were hanging on the fence looking there, and you know, oh my God, you know, he says, I'm walking along there, see, and he says, I walk into the administration building there. He says, we had this little flight office there where you come in, you check out, and you give them your clipboard, you know, what you've been doing. And he said, the kid looks up there. He said, oh, by the way, sir. He says, you know, when you get in advanced training, you're sir, you know. He says, oh, by the way, sir. He said, would you check the bulletin board? I think your name's up there. And he says, so I walked over to the bulletin board. He said, and there was a thing there. And he says, well, the following cadets who are involved in advanced training, please report to the clinic as of tomorrow morning at 0800. And he said, my name was there. I didn't figure much about it. He said, so I, next morning, he said, I had a flight that I was scheduled for noon that day. And he said, I walked down to the clinic there. And he said, and I joined Clifford. And Leroy was down there. And he said, we sit around for a while. We're joking away. And then all of a sudden, the doctor comes to the door there. And he calls me. And he said, would you come in here, sir? We'd like to take a look. Just a check. Just a routine check. And he said, and they run me through the routine check. And he said, my weight was perfect, see? And he says, he lays that little metal thing on the top of my head. And he says to me, he says, excuse me, he says, would you please stand up straight? And he said, well, what do you mean I am standing up straight? He said, well, please stand up a little straighter. He said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, he said, excuse me, he said, may I see your record? He says, Corporal, would you bring this man's record over here? He looks at the record, and he said, even at that point, I didn't suspect nothing. He said, I thought maybe he had a little problem with the, you know, with the figures or something on the record. He said, you know, I was going to tell him maybe a serial number wrong, something like that. He says, excuse me, he said, you know, you measure. He says, how'd you get in the Air Force? He said, what do you mean, how'd I get in the Air Force? I get in the Air Force because I belong in the Air Force. He said, oh, no, you don't. You do not belong in the Air Force. He says, you are now, he says, you, excuse me, he said, would you please stand, I'm going to check this again. He said, would you stand up straight? I stood up straight, and he said, at that time, I'm beginning to suspect something. He says, that old fear started to come back, and he said, Corporal, would you please note this on this man's record, 5 feet, 5 inches, and 1 quarter? This man is 5 feet, 5 inches, 1 quarter, which just places him 3/4 of an inch below the basic minimum for a fighter pilot. We just can't do this. He says, Sergeant, would you come in and recheck this man for me? He said, another sergeant comes in, just like the one that I'd seen at the recruiting station. He's a big, tall guy. He had them stripes all over, running up and down. He said, and he walks up and he says, excuse me, sir, would you please stand next to this? He says, they took me to another room. They had another measurer. He says, he lays that thing on the bed and he says, you know, are you sure that you're right in there, Lieutenant? Did you 5 feet, 5 inches and a quarter? I get 5 feet, 5 even. He says, my God, I'm shorter on this one. He says, well, they sat me down in front of the desk. He said, and all I know is that they called in a few other guys. One guy was a lieutenant colonel. There was a guy come in with a major's leaf on the top of his hat there. He said, and the next thing I know, he says, they're calling up somebody else, and he says, and the teletype goes, he says, and 5 minutes later, they handed me my discharge. He said, it all happened in a half an hour. I want to tell you it happened in a half an hour. I said, you mean? He said, that's what I mean. He said, that's exactly what I mean. That's exactly what I mean. I said, 5 feet, 5 inches and a quarter, you shrunk again? He said, yeah, I shrunk. He said, I don't know what it was. I shrunk. I said, but Harold, didn't you appeal your case? He says, yeah, I did. He says, I appealed it. He says, I worked on those stretching bars, he said, for 3 months. He says, when I went back, I come up at 5 feet, 4 inches, and 3 quarters. He says, I lost another quarter. I said, Harold, how tall are you now? He says, 5 feet, 3 and an 8. I says, Harold, you put me on. He says, putting you on like hell. He said, you see it back there? And sure enough, there's a picture of him standing next to that fighter plane. He had pictures taken of the days when he was 5 feet 6, when he was a big man. Never got back. Never got back. And so, Gloria, if you think you've been discriminated against, Betty Friday, and if you think they've laid the hand of discrimination on your head, think of Harold. Harold dreams these days. By the way, he's going down now to about 5 feet 2. He's going down steady. Shows no improvement. His dream keeps floating up there somewhere in the middle distance. But he just keeps going down. New York. Stay tuned for Lester Smith, who ain't short. He's got the news.